about some famous friends you probably never heard of. But back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not know them here in this big city we're in, but when I go back home, I've got some famous friends. Yeah, I do.
God, I love it when this guy joins us. In fact, with the bye week coming up, my buddy
Jason, he's I was going to take a couple days next week, you know, recharge the batteries, do my best. Never mind. And I didn't want to miss Wednesday's show because I didn't want to miss our time with this guy. He is our second favorite.
So you're scheduling your family vacations around Brian Bulaga's.
It's not a family
appearance.
Vacation. We're not going
Brian,
on a family
that
vacation.
That should make you feel really good, Blue.
Yeah, you're special, Brian. You're special. Hi.
It does make me feel good. Yeah, it does make me feel good. Yeah, that's great.
I don't like you enough to then do the Homer Hour on Thursday, though. I'm going to skip that because I'm not going to talk
to you. I usually plan my time off when Bulaga and Domofsky are coming on, so that's nice. Uh-huh.
You plan your time off all the time. Let's not kid ourselves.
That's
all right, Brian,
true.
Help us out with this. So our guy, Adam Schefter, says there's a realistic chance that Jordan Love plays on Sunday. Now, I say no blank blank because we know that he avoided a catastrophic injury, a Mark Tauscher-style torn-off-the-bone groin injury that keeps you out three or four games. I am curious, based on your confidence, though, in Malik, what you talking about Willis, if you would play what Mike McCarthy would call the high side of caution about playing him in this game, or is it such an important game that you got to play your guy?
Yeah, I mean it's a tough question because everyone knows. I heard you guys talking about before. I mean, Jordan Love gives the team the best chance to win, whether that's at 60%, 70%, whatever he's going to be at. I mean, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, he gives the team the best chance to win. But that's not to say that Malik Willis couldn't do enough to get them in a position to win the game. That's kind of where I'm at with Malik Willis right now. I think he can rally this offense and they can do enough to keep them in the game with Detroit, right? Like, I'm not sure if we need Malik Willis to go win the game like Jordan mm-hmm. Love did, say, on the final drive against Houston. I'm not, like, because we haven't seen it yet, right? Like, mm-hmm. so, like, I can't say he could do it because we haven't seen it yet. Like, I get it, he beat Indy. I get it, he beat Tennessee. I get it, he came in and beat Jacksonville. But like, this is a different team that we're talking about Malik Willis going to face, mm-hmm. right? If he is to be the guy. So the game has to look a certain way for Malik Willis to play this game and for them to be successful. I feel like this isn't going to be the way it would look if Jordan Love was playing. And what I mean by that is, you're going to have to run the ball with Malik Willis, that is, around 35 times to be successful against Detroit, which you may not be able to because if Detroit's scoring at a certain rate, you got to keep up with touchdowns. You know, you got to score a score for a score, and that doesn't allow you to run the football that way. So then that makes you look at defensively, the defense has to have a day. Like they did in Detroit on Thanksgiving last year. They got to have a day and they need to play in a similar style and manner. So there's a lot that would need to go right for this team if Malik Willis were to start and be the guy if Jordan Love can't go. Is it impossible? No. Like, and is there confidence with Malik Willis in that locker room with the coaching staff? Absolutely. He's given them no reason not to be confident in him, which is a testament to him. But it's going to look different to beat Detroit with Willison versus Love. So if Jordan Love's at 70%, 60%, I mean, 60%'s tough. Like, you know what I mean? If he's at 60%, that's hard to put a guy out there against Detroit. Mm-hmm. But say he's at 70%, I think, and he feels good enough to go, I think you got to let him go and let him play. But at 60%, man... You're not moving around very good. Like you're struggling to even get out of the pocket and evade basic, you know, pressures or just not even pressures, just simple pocket movement, stepping up and out and all that. So if he's anywhere below 70%, I would play the high side of caution. Yeah, you want to win this football game, like you said, Jason, before I got on. Yeah, you want to win it. It's not a must-win game. You don't want to fall too far behind Detroit in this chase, so to speak, because that's what it would become. If you lose to Detroit, it becomes a chase then. You're chasing Detroit mm-hmm. the rest of the way. Mm-hmm. But is it potentially worth risking Jordan Love if he does then have an injury like Tausch had where he rips that thing in a bad way, right? Like, I mean, that thing, it goes from like a, you know, a semi-bad strain or a sprain, whatever they want to call it, to a severe one. And then, yeah, you got the bye week. But listen, for everyone that's listening, the bye week ain't healing it. It's not doing it. You know, like, he's not going to heal over the bye week if he injures it again on Sunday. So, like, just might as well throw that out the window. Like, it's not going to happen. So that's what you have to weigh and risk and kind of figure out if you're the team doc, if you're Love, if you're Goody, if you're LaFleur. You got to weigh that balance and see is it worth it. And to me, if he can't move and do what he needs to do, like, I think you got to go with Willis and you got to build this game plan to win ugly. And to me, that's okay. Winning ugly is okay. Like, I'm good with it. Make this thing as ugly as it can get. I'm good with it. But then you have to build the plan around it. So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
It's also potentially supposed to rain on Sunday afternoon. I just saw
even better. Even better.
Weather. Let me ask you both this, because you both played through a ton of injuries during your playing careers. When it's a soft tissue issue, which was what I was trying to ask LaFleur on Monday, frankly, about the idea of having this week and the bye week, and then a full week until they play the Bears on the 17th of November. Is it different than when it's a pain tolerance? Like, you guys played through MCLs, right? And you weren't going to make it worse necessarily, but you were in some pain throughout the game. Like, is it different when it's a soft tissue, I can pull it worse than it already is? Does that factor into the equation, or am I just being bubble wrap city guy worrying too much?
You want to take it, Tausch, or you want me to take
go for it?
Yeah, I think it changes the dynamic a little bit. Like, when you're talking about joint versus soft tissue, it's a completely different ball game. When it's soft tissue like this apparently is, yeah, I mean, you can make it worse. You can make it a lot worse, right? Like, because if it was already a lot worse, there'd be no way he could play. So, yes, it can mm-hmm. get worse, which is why we always see when guys get hamstrings, they're down for at least 3 weeks, because it could get a lot worse. So, like, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a risk for sure, where when you're dealing with some knee pain and it's in the joint, yeah, there's damage in there, but, like, if you protect it enough or you brace it, or, like, yeah, I mean, sure, you could always make it worse, but the chances of it getting worse are slim. This is a different story when it's soft tissue. It just is.
Yeah, with soft tissue, the clock gets reset, and you don't want to reset the clock. You want to mm-hmm. continue to push and get that thing so that you feel – because you're not going to be back to 100%. If you yank a hammy and you pop it, and I only did that once, and that was in an off season, doing a bunch of sprint work, Blue, a lot of like sprinting hundreds, and just, and I never grinded. Thought I could pop a hamstring, so I was shocked by that. But it does take a while, and what you don't want to do is, oh, I want to get back out there and do this, and then you feel that boop, a little twinge or that little bap, basically a reminder, hey, don't be an idiot. That's how I always looked at yep. it. So you have mm-hmm. to let that go, because the last thing you want to do here is throw Jordan out there at 60% and he's not mobile, he's not able to make the plays that he wants to, and then and all of a sudden now you go from a minimal injury to he's going to be out 3-4 more weeks, and you think you're chasing Detroit then. You're really going to be chasing mm-hmm. him. So that's the balancing act, and that's where I know – as a player, we always hated when Wildy or Demofsky would come up and say, oh, what percentage are you at? What do you think? Listen, bro, I don't know. Like, what do you want me to make up a number? Oh, and I would always,
yes.
I would never give like a 5 or an 0. It'd be like, I'm about 77. Oh, I'm probably like 84 and a quarter, you know, just because it's a ridiculous premise. The bottom line is, do you feel good enough to play or not? That's really what you want. And mm-hmm. you want to have some type of a barometer. So I'm sure I'll be fascinated to see when Jason asks Jordan what percentage he's at, what Jordan ends up saying.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask him, Matt.
What are you going to say?
First of all,
we need him to talk today, right? So I would think that if he practices on a limited basis, he will talk and he will have the directive from Matt LaFleur to say, well, I was limited. So any questions of what were you able to do? Did you take some team reps? My question, I think, would be, Jordan, it looked like there were times where even just making subtle movements within the pocket were painful
wincy.
For you.
Wincy.
Right, wincing. I'll sneak you. I saw you wince. Perfect. Thank you for your help.
You're welcome.
Okay? Also, you also made some throws on the run where it clearly hurt a lot because you were hopping.
Grimacing.
After you threw
so
it.
So you went from a wince to a grimace. You can go
not
there.
To be confused with the big purple guy from McDonald's. All right. So you go correct. From a wince to a grimace to collapsing on the field and going out of the game.
Is there anything is that we could put? Because it's nice to have that little boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, you can workshop that for me, and
wince,
we'll get back to you
grimace,
the next segment.
And then collapse? I don't think that's the way you want
to
go.
What do you have to be able to do, and how much better do you have to be able to do those things than you were able to do them on Sunday in order to play? That's kind of what I was kind of formulating in my mind. That's how I want to approach it. We will discuss this further. I want to talk a little bit about the offensive line during tackle talk, because if your quarterback's not going to be as mobile as he normally is, more pressure on those guys as well. We'll see.
You like
Brian...
recoil? I just Googled. Do you like
well,
recoil?
Well, that's not grimace or wince,
well, I
though.
Just put other words, similar words from Oxford with wince, and grimace is the first one that pops up.
Sure.
And then flinch, I think it was more than a flinch.
Yeah,
recoil and
flinch.
Blench. I don't know what the word blench even means, but that's on here too.
Tausch will continue to go through the thesaurus, but he has to stop doing the thesaurus to tell us about AmFam, which, by the way, has a partnership with Jordan Love.
No wincing
that's
about
synergy.
That partnership. We love it. Packer fans, ready for some game day excitement? Well, next time you're at Lambeau, stop by the American Family Insurance Title Townhouse and experience the thrill of making a game-saving play with our interactive Protect the End Zone game. Plus, don't miss out on all the amazing giveaways from exclusive Packers merch to special prizes. There's something for everybody. Visit us at Title Town to make your game day unforgettable. For more info, check out amfam.com/packers. To enter today. Dream fearlessly, insure carefully.
More with Brian Bulaga next. It's Wilde and Tausch.
This is Wilde and Tausch, brought to you by Grassland Butter. Grassland Dairy is Wisconsin. Learn more at grasslandbutter.com.
I've got some famous friends you probably never heard of, but back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not know them here in this big city we're in.
Continuing with Brian Bulaga. Tausch, I feel like I've kind of monopolized Brian's time.
Yeah, you're doing a great job, Jason. With that said, Blue, give me your breakdown on the tape up front. How did the boys look up front in your film breakdown?
I think we struggled this week a little bit overall. And, you know, it obviously, you know, breakdowns on offense – I mean, as someone, and you know this as well, when breakdowns on offense happen, a lot of the times, and I never, you know, I'm an apologist for offensive linemen, but the unfortunate mm-hmm. part of it is when breakdowns happen, a lot of the times it starts with us up front. And that's just the way this thing works on offense. And for the good or bad, right, if there's good things that are happening, it starts with us. If there's bad things that are happening, it also starts with us. So, like, this week we struggled a little bit. I thought Sheed struggled a little bit this week. I mean, listen, the Jags got two good pass rushers. And, yeah, there were just times he struggled in the run in the pass game. I thought Meyer struggled a touch as well. surprisingly, like, and again, this always surprises me when he doesn't play well, is Elton didn't have his finest game, I don't think. So, you just look up and down the board. It wasn't the O-line's best, best game. And there were always – listen, there's good things and there's bad things that happen throughout a game. There were good times of pass pro. There were good run plays. I mean, Jacobs was very productive, so there had to be some good things that happened throughout the game, which there was. But I look at it as a whole, not just like a certain series or a certain play. And as a whole, I think the group as a whole struggled in this game, which I didn't really – like going into the game, I thought this was going to be a dominant performance mm-hmm. against this group. I understood that they have two good pass rushers that are good players, but I feel good about the tackles, so like that was never really a concern. And I knew interior wise we had guys that could handle the guys inside. And Jacksonville played well, right? That's really. You can't take anything away from the guys up front for Jacksonville. They played well. They did a good job. And I'm hoping the tape – and I think that this is what's going to happen. And I said it on Monday too, right? Like, when you have these games where you're going against an opponent that you're better than and you struggle, it happens once, like, say, against L.A. And, yeah, there's correcting from it. But you still get the win and – you go to the meeting room the next day and you don't really want the tape sucks to watch, but you get through it and you still walk out of there where we got the win. Happens again. And it's another, not optimal performance. You get the win. The coaches have to start, kind of changing the rhetoric of how they're grading the tape at that point. And it happened with us plenty of times with how Campy would react in meeting rooms with us. If we didn't perform well against the team we should be performing well against, like happens once, like, okay, hey, we need to correct X, Y, and Z. And if it continues to show itself, well, now you need to dive into this thing a little bit more and guys need to be individuals need to start being corrected a little bit more. And that's probably what's going on. So I'm hoping they learn from it. Right, like because the opponent they have coming in, they can't play that way against this opponent. This opponent will make this game look a lot different than what it did against Jacksonville. So I'm hoping for a better performance. And I think those guys up front, knowing how Jason's talked about Zach Tom and I know Elton, how these guys operate, they know it's got to be better and they're going to put their best foot forward.
What did you think of the tight end blocking? Because you said it, Jacobs had a big day. He was very productive. Did you like what you saw from the tight ends and maybe even some of the receivers with some of the perimeter runs?
Well, yeah, Watson, again, we continue to talk about him like the guy that should be upset, right? Like, because he continues to go out there and performs and does the dirty jobs, right? Like he's downfield blocking for Jacobs. He's like, and LaFleur's offense in the run game, the up front, the blocking, it's got to be clean to get the guys at the second level. But where the big runs hit are when the receivers are cracked, replacing properly, and those guys are blocking downfield. And Watson continues to show up doing. Listen, he's a big bodied receiver. He's mm-hmm. strong. He's physical. And he continues to show up on tape as someone who is doing that, unsung hero job downfield as a receiver. And I get it. The receivers, they want to catch passes. And, like, I get that. And I want him to catch passes. I want him to score touchdowns. Like, believe me, he's working his tail off on the field. You could see it. So you want him to be rewarded with, touchdowns and receptions and all that. But, listen, man, like, there's something to be said about guys that, do that role, that block downfield, and they don't get – it doesn't show up on the stat sheet for receivers, but he doesn't, and he does it well. I still think, when I talk about the tight ends, I kind of talk about it blocking as the same as the offensive line when it's the unit up front blocking. If it's six guys blocking, I kind of include them all in one. And listen, like there were good things that like Tucker Kraft and those guys did. Again, Jacobs was productive. So like there were good moments, but like, there's still a lot to be left out there. And, like, it's – it's not a knock. It's not saying that they can't do it. It's not, and like, because Tucker Kraft has shown that he is more than capable and more than willing and a very good blocker, and he can do it. So, like, it's not saying, but like, there's just moments that when you need something, it's got to be a little bit cleaner. It's got to be a little bit better. Like, it's okay, and I'm not saying it's okay, but looking at a tape as a whole, it's okay if you have a couple bad runs. Like, that's going to happen in the NFL. That's life in the NFL. If you have a couple, you know, pass protections that aren't super clean, that's life. That's going to happen. But if it continues to happen, that's an issue, right? Like, and that starts to magnify what's, you know, a unit's performance. And that's kind of what I saw watching the tape as a whole. Like, you know, one side of the line looks good. Well, there's a breakdown over here. Pressure. Okay, you know, quarterback's got to move out of the pocket, get rid of it, or can't go through his progression, or a run play. Front side double team looks good. Backside didn't get the backside scoop. Three techs penetrating on the backside. Well, play's blown up. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, it's small things like that that showed up in that game. And that's really what, you know, why I, when I watch it, is why I say that.
So, Blue, the obviously one of the big storylines this week is Hutchinson's not playing, and he is a wrecking ball. Mm-hmm. As a former player, how are you feeling? Because you like to test yourself against great players, but you also don't mind the fact that they're a stud that's going to be a handful all day and playing. How did you view that?
Yeah, I mean, listen, certainly the injury that he suffered is gruesome, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's a nasty, nasty injury. Like, you don't wish that upon guy you go against. Like, that's a bad injury. So, like, that, let's just start with that. But the second thing is, like, I'll go back to 2014 or maybe 16. Saturday walkthrough before we played the Houston Texans at home. And we get done with walkthrough, and it's a nice, you know, winterish day. The snow's starting to slowly fall. And, you know, I think it was Jason – I think it was my guy Whalers. He came up to me. He goes, "Hey, just want to let you know, Clowney didn't get on the flight." And I go, "Excuse me?" He goes, "Clowney didn't get on the flight." I go, "Well, that makes me a little bit happier on this Saturday before the game." So, like, for sure, I will say that, like, yeah, when these big time pass rushers happen to not play that week, it perks your spirits up a little bit. So, like, there's definitely no doubt that Zach Tom. Well, yes, you do want to test yourself against top guys, and I believe Zach Tom's a top guy, so he would welcome the challenge. He has every time he's played Hutch in you know, their last matchups. You don't mind that he's not there, right? It's not like I wish Hutchinson was playing. Man, I really wish he was out there bull rushing me 40 times a game. That'd be really nice. So, like, you take it with a little bit of grain of salt. You don't want a guy to be badly injured like that. That's definitely not the case. But, you know, Clowney misses a flight. Well, he's not on the plane. That stinks. Just the way it goes.
So, Brian, I want to shift to the other side of the ball. I want you to kind of do what Robert Saleh is doing for the Packers, except in the opposite direction. Because you obviously watch the film not just of how the offensive line plays, but you break everything down. So as an offensive tackle, look, this is the Zach Tom, Penei Sewell appreciation society around here, right? Like, those guys, you guys are former right tackles. You appreciate how both of them are really good players. But let's focus on Sewell for a second, only because I understand what he's doing, because that's Matt LaFleur's job, is to not, you know, publicly, harshly criticize his guys. But the last question that I got to ask on Monday was about the level of production they've gotten from their four-man rush, right? Which is not much. It's not much. Mm-hmm. Now, it's great that they've got their replacement fire zones and their simulated pressures, but the bottom line is they're not getting a lot of pressure with just their front four. And when you can, it makes everything better for your defense. So when you watch the Packers' front four pass rushers, Carl Brooks, certainly LVN, and obviously Rashawn Gary and Preston Smith, what are you seeing from them? Because Matt LaFleur's response was, well, in today's game, you got backs that are chippy. You got tight ends that are, and it's really almost like you're rushing against seven.
Well, we had that in our day too.
Which is exactly what I was about to say next. You guys had that too, and I didn't hear anyone saying, well, that's why they're not getting home, is because they're like having to go against seven guys. Help me understand why they're not getting home more.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think I got to play with a hell of a pass rusher that wore the G on his helmet, Clay Matthews, and there probably wasn't a guy more double-teamed and chipped and thumped and running back came out to him more than I've seen that guy on a given play. I mean, there were times where there would be three guys out there putting hands on Clay before he even got into a pass rush. So, like, and he would still find a way to create a pressure some way, somehow, right? Clay would figure out a way. So, like, I understand what LaFleur is doing, and listen, he's protecting his guys, and I get it, and I respect it, and I understand it, and I'm all for it. I get it. But they're watching that tape, and they're in those meeting rooms, and this could be a bigger Robert Saleh week to help out the defensive side of the ball than you may ever need, because as of right now, we've all seen it. It's no mystery right now. Like, rushing with four and how we've seen such a lack of production, if you bring that same, rush pattern in against Detroit, Goff could have 5 seconds back there hanging out, right? And that's when Jared Goff is completely clean in the pocket.
Mm-hmm. He's really good.
He tears teams up. Like, he's really, really good. So, like, you can't do that. So this is a big week of – I get it, Jason. You said, like, the fire zones and simulated pressures, like those. Because if you can't win with your four, you got to figure out a way to do that, but also protect yourself in coverage. And there's no one better than you to have at your disposal to help you with these things than Saleh, because this is his. I mean, it's not his defense, but it is in theory the defense that he's ran everywhere. He's very good at it. Albeit he's had pass rushers everywhere he's gone, right? Like, I mean, in San Fran he had studs, and the Jets he had I get that.
Not this year.
And I think Green Bay, yeah. But I mean, in his previous seasons, he's had really good pass rush. I mean, I think the Jets, what, McDonald has like 9 sacks this year.
Oh yeah, that's
already
true.
The DN. So like, I mean,
pick
I think
slop.
He's doing okay.
Yeah,
I mean, I think he's doing all right. So, like, it's like, but again, I think when I watch the Packers front four, and I look at it, it's a sim, and it's like, I've talked to you guys about this before, and I wish I could get into it in more depth. I'm not a, D lineman. They're just not winning one-on-one matchups fast enough. Like, right? Like, sure, you may win eventually. But eventually in the NFL, the ball's gone, right? Like, it's out of the quarterback's hand. Eventually never gets it done. Like, and Tausch knows this, like, if you stop a defensive lineman's first move, the chance of you winning that block goes up, like, tremendously. Mm-hmm. Like, if you stop their first initial move, the rep is almost over by the time the quarterback has dropped back, hit his launch point, scanned, and threw it. So, like, we aren't winning up front on our first initial move, which then caused them to go into a secondary move. And by the time you win on a secondary move, the ball's most likely gone.
Right.
And that's what I see right now from the Packers D line. Like, the initial surge is not getting it done. And that's why we're seeing what we're seeing. And against Detroit, you're going to have to figure out a way to make Goff uncomfortable with four guys rushing, because we know what they have from a secondary or from a receiver standpoint and a tight end standpoint and running backs out of the backfield standpoint. But you got to get home some way, somehow. So if that's, fire zones, if that's simulated looks, whatever it may be, you got to do it. Because if you just rush four against Detroit with this offensive line that they have, And you can't be productive, it's going to be tough on you. It's going to be really tough. And they're going to do to you what they've been doing to teams. And that's
172 points in the last four games.
Yeah.
172 points.
Yeah, like, they're at, like, I think, what was it, averaging over 30 the last 1400, like, that, those are crazy numbers. Like, that's a crazy number. So, like, if you think you're going to go in there and just, like, run down the center of these Detroit offensive linemen, it ain't working. It's just not working. You're not going to run down the middle of Penei Sewell and think you're going to get home. It's just not going to happen. Like, he's too good. He's too smart. He's too strong. Like, and that's, you look at this entire offensive line, they all play so good next to each other, right? Like, they've been together for a while now, and they all play so complementary next to each other that you can't beat them on basic things. Like, and that's, and it's really how probably Tausch felt when he had that really good line with, you know, Cliff and Wall and Rivera. That's how I felt when we had Sitton and TJ and Bach and Corey. Like, you can't beat us with just regular stuff. You have to come with something very creative to beat us. And that's what Green Bay is going to have to come up with against this Detroit offensive line, because they're really good. And that's my one point in this game, that if Green Bay is going to be successful, it has to be up front on the defensive side of the ball. Because if not, it's going to be a long day on defense.
Tausch, anything else?
I mean, I was going to get into the Iowa-Wisconsin stuff, but I know Blue is joining Jimmy Rutledge later, so we'll leave that there. And
not only that, I'm being told in my ear from our producer extraordinaire that you're also going to join Wisconsin College game day. We're going to have a Hawkeye on game day. Is that true?
No. I don't know when I got that invite.
I'm inviting you now.
I don't know when he got that invite either.
Jeez, Wilde's now overbooking Blue.
I was like, well, that hasn't come through my phone yet.
Hey, Blue, how does Iowa score 6 this weekend?
This isn't the old school Iowa.
They got it done last week.
Yeah, they're scoring points.
They got it done last week.
I don't feel great about trash talking Brian this week. I don't.
Hey, Blue, I have not been to Iowa City in a while. Any spot I have to hit when I'm down there?
I would go to the airliner, get a burger, a beer.
Okay. Airliner.
Yeah, the airliner is a good spot. It depends on when you go. Like, listen, it's going to be crazy down there with Wisconsin fans and Iowa fans, but the airliner is a good spot.
All right.
It's right on the main drag downtown there when you get into Iowa City and the campus. It's one of my favorite. When I went back there for my weekend out there,
Farmer
that was one
of the
first
year
places
award.
I stopped.
Foy.
Yeah. Yeah. When I went out there for that, that was like the first place I went. So it's a must.
Okay.
As much as I'd like to book you on the pregame show, I misread Jesse's text. You will be joining the jump around on the ESPN Madison YouTube channel.
Isn't that what I literally just said?
It is. I was wrong.
Oh, wow. You were wrong. Blue, can you believe
unlike
that?
Unlike some people on the panel, I can admit that.
But if you would like to do Saturday evening, we've got some openings if you're available for a segment or two.
I'm sorry.
Is there any way you want to join Jesse on the volleyball coverage postgame on
Friday
night?
Huge on with Nebraska on Friday. Now, that's our common enemy there. We could have you on there, sure.
Brian, I'm sorry.
Hey, Blue, before you go, I will ask you this, and this will be quick. Iowa's biggest rival is?
Like in the Big Ten?
Yep. Because it's not Iowa State.
Is it Iowa State?
I mean, no, it's a made-up rival. It can't be a rival when Iowa State barely wins.
Yeah. They're really good.
Yeah, they're good this year. Yeah, this year,
yeah,
sure.
This year.
But in past, the rival has to win a lot for it to be a rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably say I always looked at it when I was at Iowa. I always thought it was Wisconsin. Because it was the two programs like mirrored each other. Like they were very similar in style, and it was literally like every time you played them, it was like playing your team out at practice, and it was difficult to do. So like I always thought it was Wisconsin. It's a trophy game. Both fan bases love it. So that's the way I always look at it.
All right.
Wisconsin, it's not a mirror game anymore. Wisconsin has changed the way it plays, and Iowa has not changed significantly how it plays. So I look forward to that game. Sorry to try and create more work for you. I will talk to you tomorrow on the Homer Hour, though. I think you're still scheduled for that program. And you will be joined.
Prep Mania color commentary on Friday night, too, at Verona. Big one.
We do have the Madison Money Guy on Saturday mornings, too, if you want to talk finances. My bad. Brian, we appreciate you. Thank you.
All right, guys.
Yeah, I misread that. I misread it.
Coors Light, brewed with a three-step cold process, cold lager, cold filtered, and cold packaged, so it's made to chill. And when you overbook people, it's probably a good idea to sit back and chill. The mountains, make sure they're blue. That's when you know Coors Light's cold-activated bottles and cans are chilled to perfection. That's why it is Coors Light in my hand when I need a moment to chill. Sub responsibly, Coors Brewing Company at Golden, Colorado.
Proud sponsor of the ESPN Wisconsin College Game Day pregame and postgame
show. And Blue is joining that, or is he not? I'm confused now.
Won't it be something if he actually does agree to do a segment now on that?
I think he'd actually be great on the Edge Construction Home Remodeling Show with Rutledge.
Well, he's got all that. He's fixing up his property. Yeah, he's
he'd be good on that one.
He could probably.
The America Needs Farmers Sunday Conversation, which we'll start doing as well.